Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today on University Matters, Dr. Alan Deydoun. Just a few words about my guest. He studied at the University of Malta. Dr. Deydoun's specialisation is in marine and coastal biology. As one might imagine, with an interest like that, he's an avid scuba diver and organises also regular natural history courses. He has wide research interests that include ecological processes, community analyses, biodiversity, sustainability and management of living resources, as well as, obviously, environmental studies. He regularly presents papers at international conferences and is a member of a number of learned Italian and UK-based societies. And Dr. Deydoun is well known here in Malta as a columnist on environmental matters and is scientific advisor to the NGO Nature Trust. He has recently joined the Physical Oceanography Unit of the International Ocean Institute Malta Operational Centre here at the University of Malta. Welcome to you, Dr. Deydoun.
Thank you very much.
Well, today we're going to talk about jellyfish.
Yes.
Not only, I hope we'll have some time to talk about other things as well. What's happening about these lovely jellyfish?
As you might imagine, people who actually read a newspaper or follow a news bulletin might have heard that in recent years there has been renewed interest in jellyfish. I say renewed because this is not the first time that in Malta or in the world we're interested with jellyfish. In fact, when doing some research, I found out that the first time there was a newspaper article in Malta on jellyfish, it was way back in 1958, about 25 years ago, 1988. Even water polo games had to be suspended because of a jellyfish outbreak. And water polo players were sent abroad for their training. So this has been a problem which we've been facing in Malta for a number of years. However, there has been a new approach recently from the scientific community when it comes to jellyfish. Namely, in trying to come up with reasons why there is such a blooming, such an explosion in their populations, and also trying to come up with viable management solutions. In fact, the problem has been even been recognized by an organization such as FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, which mainly deals with agriculture and fisheries. But the jellyfish problem, let's call it problem for now, but I also see it as an opportunity, the jellyfish problem has now implications even for fisheries. So, at our center, we've been running for the past year now, we've just started the second year, a program, a citizen science program, called Spot the Jellyfish. Such jellyfish spotting programs are common all over the world. There is a massive one operated by the Monterey Bay Aquarium in the US, which is global. So they have this huge map of the entire world, and people can actually submit their reports from all over the world. So basically, we took the cue from such programs, and we developed our own program, which is innovative in its own way. We didn't just do a carbon copy of existing projects. In fact, for example, people who cite a jellyfish can submit their report to such a system in a number of ways, not just through an email, even through SMS, even through our dedicated website, even by sending in a leaflet. So we try to make it as user-friendly as possible. We targeted school children a lot. In fact, such a program was sponsored in addition to Malta Tourism Authority by the IOI Kids program. We targeted a lot school children because we believe that the program, besides having its scientific merit, must also generate awareness amongst the younger generations. And in fact, I can say with pleasure that a new species of jellyfish was last year recorded from Maltese waters. A total of 3 new records were made, but one of them, the Blue Button, was actually recorded by a 15-year-old girl who was not Maltese. She is French. She was on holiday in Malta. She was in Gozo, and she took this photo, and when we saw it, obviously, we did our
new
species for Malta, so children did actually participate. Obviously, you need some quality control at some stage. In fact, it's not, the reports we receive many reports, but obviously first we have to validate them. We have to check them. Ideally, we like reports to be substantiated by photos, to be backed up by a photo, okay? Or at least if a photo is not possible, a brief description. Cannot just say I saw 50 of species A, okay, because we didn't put scientific names on our posters. We simply put a letter A, B, C, D, E, so as to make it. One other thing is that, and this might raise some eyebrows, but in my opinion, it's quite positive, that the initiative is being funded and supported by MTA, Motor Tourism Authority. And one might argue there's quite a conflict between tourism considerations and jellyfish considerations and jellyfish monitoring considerations. But I don't see it that way, and luckily MTA sees it our way too. Tourism authorities have learned the lesson that it doesn't pay to actually try to conceal a jellyfish outbreak, because people nowadays have access to the internet. And they will get to know, and probably they will get to know, they will get hold of incorrect information, which will generate panic and so on. Something similar is currently happening in Florida, for example. In Florida, there's an outbreak of the Portuguese manowar, which is a very dangerous jellyfish species. Currently, there are even blogs on the internet urging people to avoid Florida, going to Florida, which I think is not very healthy, because obviously you have to manage the problem. Obviously, so through our program, we have generated a lot of data, which we made available to the public. We issue regular press releases, in general once every 2 or 3 weeks. So all data is made public. In fact, on the website, which I think I can literally say here, we have an ad hoc website, as I said. It is www.iokids.net/jellyfish. There is even a map of the Maltese Islands, which is updated every day, plotting the sightings of jellyfish in the Maltese Islands. So one can literally go and see, Golden Bay. And the sightings are divided into stinging and non-stinging species.
In fact, that's what I was going to ask you, because jellyfish have got a bad name, obviously, because we feel the stinging ones.
Yes.
But I presume that there are different types, different species
of course.
Jellyfish.
And even when one takes a look at newspaper blogs, one feels that people are becoming informed, are being more and more informed and aware. For example, the fried egg jellyfish, which normally appears in late summer in Malta, is a very large jellyfish. I think one of the largest in the Maltese Islands, but it's completely innocuous. So it's not size which matters. One of the smallest jellyfish in Malta is the box jellyfish, which luckily is not as deadly as the Australian, as its Australian counterpart, which can be lethal. But this one has a painful sting all the same, but it's very small, so it's not size. In Malta, we're plagued by the mauve stinger, which is the most common one, the purplish one, Pelagia noctiluca. And incidentally, this species, there have been cycles for this species documented over the years, going back up till 1950s and 1960s. So it's blooming, it's explosion. It's not a new phenomenon. What is happening, however, is that the cycles, these blooms are becoming ever more frequent, and they're becoming more protracted in time. So, and there are a number of possible reasons behind this phenomenon, because obviously all discussions on jellyfish end in the same way. Why is this happening, And perhaps I preempted you here.
No, I was going to say, yes. My next question would have been, why is it happening? Is it true that it's because their own predators are now fewer in number than they used to be?
That's quite a good potential reason why. And in fact, there isn't a consensus, but most marine scientists and biologists agree that the most likely reason why is that the Mediterranean is an overfished sea. And therefore, jellyfish are facing less competition for food. because the larvae of many fish species feed on the same components of our seas, let's call them components of the pelagic system, mainly zooplankton, these small crustaceans, as jellyfish do. So there's less competition. So that's the first reason. Also, another potential reason is the gradual overheating, overwarming of the Mediterranean, which is making their reproductive cycle faster, happen faster. Also, there is the coastal urbanization, these placing of, developing of concrete seawalls and concrete jetties and so on. Those are ideal places for attachment of their sessile parts, because without being too technical, the life cycle of a jellyfish is very complex. We only see the floating part, the pelagic part, the medusa. But there's another component, which is sessile, which attaches itself to a surface. So having these concrete, smooth surfaces, that's ideal for their attachment. And there are other reasons. The many individuals mentioned the fact that there are less turtles. It's true that turtles feed partly on jellyfish. It's not the main part of their diet. So that's only a minor reason why behind these blooms, you know. So the whole issue is quite a complex one. And obviously long-term research and monitoring in these aspects is needed.
Well, that's an interesting project. And as you say, an example of a collaboration between the people outside
exactly.
the academic sphere and the people who are doing the science exactly. behind the scenes. And talking of science behind the scenes, the Mortar Operational Centre itself is doing exactly what? I know I've had Aldo Drago on the program before, and he has told us about how are things moving on at the centre.
Yes. So our centre obviously is involved, as you rightly said, in a plethora of things. One of them is actually applying for funding projects at EU, at an EU and regional scale. And in fact, recently we acceded to two of our projects were actually accepted for funding under the Interreg project, Italia-Malta 2007-2013 call. One of these projects is called Panacea, and in fact I'm the person responsible in the University of Malta for implementing our share of Panacea. And Panacea targets mainly marine protected areas. There are six marine protected areas involved in this project. Two are in Malta and four are in Sicily. And we're basically trying to make these marine protected areas more known to the general public through development of ad hoc websites, because, for example, the two marine protected areas we're targeting in Malta, which are Dumaiza and Dueira, don't even have their own websites. To develop scientific booklets and compilations and popular leaflets for these marine protected areas, so on. So that's the, how shall I say, the publicity part, the information publicity part. Then there is the scientific part. Scientific part involves monitoring what biological assets are in these marine protected areas and also developing an ecological model. This is a new development for the Maltese Islands. Such a model, ecological modeling, is becoming more and more popular. What is ecological modeling? Basically, it couples, with, again, I'll try not to be technical here, too technical, it couples physics and biology in trying to monitor and forecast. So trying to forecast how biological assets, namely plankton, phytoplankton, zooplankton, will vary throughout the seasons. And this is important, for example, it has a number of applications, for example, in fisheries. Because fisheries people would be very interested to know, for example, this year when the spring bloom of phytoplankton will happen. Because that obviously will have an impact on the reproductive cycle of a number of commercial fish species. So, and this needs the input of physicists, and biologist, and I'm the only biologist working at our center, but I liaise very closely with physicists, with Aldo, and with other people employed at our center, and we'll try over the course of these 2 years of the project Panacea to come up with this simple, at least a simple ecological model, and later years through other projects we'll hope to go into more detail. Then there is a second project called Calypso, and it involves the installation of HF radars in Malta, in Gozo, and in Sicily to actually monitor sea currents in the Malta-Sicily Channel. Again, another interesting project which we'll implement over the next 2 years.
Going back to your first project, Panacea, you're collaborating with Sicilian academics.
Yes.
What is their situation? I mean, do they do it better than us?
This is a very good question. Malta has a lot to learn when it comes to marine protected areas. As in the rest of the world, conservation in the sea has lagged behind conservation on land. So whilst our nature reserves on land are up to scratch, so to speak, okay, we're implementing, there's a process, Natura 2000 process and so on, but we're up to scratch. In the sea, there's still a long way to go. Essa, in Sicily, they're slightly better off than us. For example, in Syracuse, and in fact, the province, the Syracuse province is the lead part in this project. They have a marine protected area whereby they have even facilities, they provide facilities for disabled people to actually be able, you know, to partake of the living assets of the marine protected area. So there's an exchange of experience here. One other thing which I was going to forget is that another partner of this project is the local council of San Lorenzo in Gozo. Since Dueira is involved, we'll aim to develop an environmental educational center. This time not in Dueira, so we'll avoid any, you know, polemics, yes. It will be developed in San Lorenzo. So hopefully people going down to Dueira for a dive, for example, scuba divers, tourists, or even people just taking a stroll, aiming to take a stroll along the coastal area of Dueira, will pass through this environmental educational center, spend a few minutes there, okay, and there will be a running exhibition. There will be didactic resources, leaflets, brochures, there'll be a video people can see, models even of the seabed, so that people will be actually informed of what to look out for in Dueira. Now, I think there's such a center is sorely felt here in Malta. There are other environmental education centers, but as I said, for terrestrial nature reserves. For example, Nature Trust has one of these in Etutolia, within university, which is very, very popular. But when it comes to marine protected areas, there aren't these centers. So one of these centers will be developed in Malta. There will be two or three others in Sicily, but at least we'll have one of these. Luckily, this is also a very good opportunity for us to visit the Sicilian marine protected areas. Some of them are beautiful. One of them is Ustica. Ustica is one of the best marine protected areas in the world because all of Ustica is protected. There is one in Lampedusa. One is Isola delle Femmine, which is, if one were to translate the name, would mean the female's island, I think, just off Palermo, and one of Syracuse. So I'm looking forward, basically, to
all these beautiful places.
Exactly.
When you talk about the marine areas, these parks,
yes,
where do they start? They start at the top of the beach. How far into the sea do they go? What are their limitations?
For Erdumayesa and Dueira, basically, Erdumayesa, the maps for both, for the extent of both, is one can find these online on the MEPA website. If I'm not mistaken, the contours of the Erdumayesa marine protected area start immediately from land, and they extend to the 50-meter depth contour. Okay, so obviously there's an issue of zoning here. Not all sections of a marine protected area fall under the same conservation regime. So parts of the marine protected area would be strictly protected. So there's no access is allowed there, no taking of specimens and so on. Other areas would be protected to a lower degree. For example, you might be allowed access there. Obviously, there's an issue with enforcement. In Malta, we suffer from a particular malaise, which is a lack of human resources, unfortunately. So far, there hasn't been much enforcement in the field. So basically, these exist on paper, you know. And last August, MEPA announced the designation of four other marine protected areas. One of them is huge, extending from the north of Gozo down to Pembroke. So it's huge. If one were to sum up the total area, marine area, included within now the total of five marine protected areas we have in Malta, that would sum up to 5% of the total territorial waters of the Maltese Islands, which is not bad. Obviously, one has to see now into the management and into the implementation, so as not to have paper reserves. You know, we need now to have some clout to actually manage, you know.
What are the advantages? What do you, as a biologist, or you from your institute, What are you looking to gain from these marine parks?
So when there are a number of factors one can consider, obviously having the possibility of liaising with our Sicilian counterparts, getting part of their hindsight, you know, of their acumen, which have they gained over the years, is already a big pro, you know, a big advantage. Obviously, another advantage from these marine protected areas is that since such areas are protected, and obviously there are no bounds for fisheries, one can observe certain behaviors, certain trends in populations of certain species where there is no pressure from fisheries, from anthropogenic, from human disturbance. You know, having a controlled environment, obviously one can make comparisons then between species living inside, within, and species outside, you know, and then obviously over a number of years gauging the success of these marine protected areas in protecting these species. Then one has to gauge, you know, has to go back to the drawing board after 5 years and revising the management plan for these marine protected areas. For people at MEAPA and whoever to revise these management plans, one has to have scientific data in hand, you know, and it is only through this project that one will have the necessary funding to be able to engage in this scientific work and this scientific monitoring, you know. Scientific monitoring costs a lot of money, especially in when you go underwater, because costs spiral out under the water. They spiral when compared to land, you know, because even all types of equipment needed and insurance cover and so on are way higher than on land. So
you would get advantage, even though the species themselves obviously then sort of move out of the park.
Yes.
You would still find some.
Yes. Nowadays, there are projects whereby fishermen are actually made aware of the benefits of having marine protected areas, because the benefits do not extend only to the marine protected areas, but to the adjacent areas where fishing might be allowed. So there's this spillover effect, because as we well know, the boundaries in the sea, in the marine domain, are not fixed. They are not cast in stone as the boundaries on land. You don't have fences, you know, so...
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking of a comparison to the on-land ones. You can't put
exactly
a fence around them.
Exactly. And, okay, for the sessile species which do not move, okay. Mm. But here we speak of fisheries, of pelagic species, you know, which move around. So, luckily, fishermen are slowly, you know, getting to grips with this phenomenon that marine protected areas don't serve only the purposes of scientists, you know, of conservationists and so on, but also their interest in, as well, in the long term.
I know that you have a personal interest in a particularly interesting phenomenon, the idea of species that move from their homeland, they migrate
exactly
to other areas. How is that going?
Yes, luckily Malta is strategically located, not just for geopolitical reasons, but also from a marine biology point of view. You know, Malta is a fantastic place to be a marine biologist, because we are at the boundary basically between different biogeographical regions, we call them. What is happening is that as a result of the warming up of the Mediterranean, we're saying that the Mediterranean is slowly becoming a tropical sea, we're observing the influx of species from other biogeographical regions of the world, basically species which have of thermal affinity, i.e. coming from warmer seas, of Indo-Pacific affinity, or of East African affinity. So since the Mediterranean is warming up, these species are finding that the Mediterranean is much more congenial as a habitat, as a place to live. And also they are, let's say, invading the Mediterranean mainly through the Red Sea, from the Red Sea, through the Suez Canal. And this phenomenon is known as Lesseps-ianism. Quite a difficult term, but Ferdinand de Lesseps was a French engineer and politician as well, was instrumental in the opening of the Suez Canal. So these species were obviously named in his honor. And then there are also some species coming in through the Straits of Gibraltar from the Atlantic, you know, coming from areas close to the west of Africa, Cape Verde, for example, and so on, these Equatorial Guinea. So coming from quite a field. And recently, there was also a species recorded by the Department of Biology, and it was as well, I think, in Knock as well, in the university news, that even a species coming from further afield. I fighting. It's the barred knife jaw, it's called. And in fact, the headline quite caught my eye because it was saying that the species which traveled 10,000 miles because it comes from the other far off reaches of the world. There are a number of factors. It could, some species, their larvae could become trapped in the ballast water of ships. So when a ship empties its ballast, when it comes, it reaches its destination, those larvae are released. That's one thing. Other species are travel, they hitch a hike, literally, as fouling organisms. They attach themselves to the hulls of ships. So that's their. Then there are the introductions through aquaculture, through the fish farming industry. There might be contaminated with larvae, okay, of the species. And there are others introductions which are accidental or willful introductions as well. For example, there's a particular species of green algae, Caulerpa, which is presumed to have entered the Mediterranean when this species were emptied in Monaco. And nowadays it has spread throughout half of the Mediterranean. So this story, it's a question here of one size does not fit all, because some species are actually adventives, i.e. they are just a one-offs. You just see an individual and that's it. For example, we had another species we recorded 2 or 3 years ago, the African moonfish, which is, so to speak, the lampuka, the dolphin fish of Equatorial Guinea. It's eaten in quite large amounts there, but it was a single individual was caught from Malta, from the entire Mediterranean. So that's a one-off, you know, it's an adventive. But then there are others which are established, they have established populations here, they have juveniles. A case in point is the cornet fish, the Fistularia commensalis. This has invaded the entire Mediterranean. It came in through the Suez Canal, invaded the entire Mediterranean, it went out through the other end of the Mediterranean, into the Atlantic Ocean, and it was caught even high up as the North Sea. So, you know, and so there's a whole, you know, and this, as one can imagine, this topic is highly riveting, and there's much scope for further research.
I can imagine. Well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Alan
Dejon,
coming on University Matters today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's programme. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.